Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. My name is Mike Whitmire, co-founder and CEO of Flowcast, Inactive CPA. Welcome to Blood, Sweat, and Balance Sheets, the podcast where we speak with entrepreneurs, finance executives, and really anyone we think is interesting out there. So for today, I want to welcome John Hussey to the podcast. A fascinating background here. So just a high-level overview, has been an NFL referee for several years here and then has founded an animal welfare organization by the name of Cuddly, and excited to chat through all of that today. So welcome to the podcast, John.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me on today.
I'm really excited to go through this conversation. I have never spoken to a referee in my life, and I'd love to just take it from the top. How did you find yourself in that role? How'd you get to referee?
Sure. So in college, I tried to play college baseball and realized quickly that I wasn't very good at it. I went to a small high school, a small Catholic high school in San Pedro, and it was a big fish in a small pond situation. When I got into the next level, tried to play at the next level, I realized athletically I couldn't compete. And so I was kind of going to school and kind of finding my way in life, what I was going to be when I grow up. And my uncle was a high school ref at the time. And I had some experience doing park and rec in high school to make extra money. Okay. It was a great way. And I always encourage young students today to think about it, to go and sign up and officiate, peewee basketball or little league or umpire little league, because it's a great way to make some extra money. It teaches you presence and comportment. Dealing with the parents is an amazing life lesson.
Especially, it's getting worse every year, right? The parents are getting tougher to deal with.
Everybody thinks their kid is Patrick Mahomes, right? Or So that's how I started. I actually started in Pop Warner, and it turned into be, you know, something I've done now almost 33 years later. I've been in the NFL this is my 19th season.
And, you know, I follow baseball pretty closely, follow football, obviously. I know in the umpire world with baseball, I mean, it's a huge deal to get to the majors. It's like the equivalent of you're a player, you get promoted, but umpire, it's, and I would argue it's actually harder. There are less jobs available for that. There are less jobs available for that role. So is NFL kind of similar? And like, what was the grind like getting into the NFL from Pop Warner?
It was similar in some ways, Michael. It's a little different now, but I will always say, and you are 100% right, baseball is an extremely hard road to get into the major leagues. They do the minor leagues. They live in a van. They drive around. The pay is not very good. They start out in single A, probably even some of the independent leagues. And you might be able to go to a camp or something like that. But you're right, baseball is very hard. In football, back when I was coming up, we had Arena Football League. They were playing in arena, and we had NFL Europe, which was the kind of the developmental league where there were teams over in Scotland and Germany. Okay. So we had to, as an official, you had to kind of navigate your way through both. And it was a way for the NFL to look at you. Not only did they look at you when you're in Division I college football, but they looked at you in arena and also NFL Europe. And that required me to be away from home 42 weekends out of the year for 2 years. Which was somewhat similar to baseball in the sense, but it was only 2 years, and we had young kids at home. My wife had to, that was a lot of strain on her to raise these two young kids. I'm traveling, I'm working during the week traveling, and then I'm leaving for the weekend. And, you know, I mean, it was work, but it was fun too, because I get to go with the boys and officiate football and, you know, hang out and go to Europe. But, so there was a little bit of that, but, overall, you know, it was obviously worth it. It was obviously worth it.
So you made the comment you were working and then flying on the weekends. Were you working a different job?
I was. I had spent the last 20 years as a business development account executive for a company in Chicago. It was a supply chain logistics company where we actually build and reset in-store fixtures. So okay. Walmart was a customer. Coca-Cola was a customer. AT&T, the iPhone launch of the displays in the AT&T stores for the iPhone. Starbucks was a customer. So that required me to make headquarter calls and travel around the country doing that. So, you know, you come home on Thursday from a trip, drop your bag when I was in college and leave on Friday. You know, so it's like kiss your wife, say hi to the kids, and then turn around and leave again.
Yeah, that is a road warrior right yes. there. You must have been racking up some miles.
I still do. I have no longer do that job anymore, that position. I've moved on since I'm the CEO of Cuddly now. But I still, I still get miles from my NFL travel. So I do pretty well in the miles department.
And as a 90s kid, I would be, I have to ask the question, XFL, referees in the XFL, how was that viewed within the referee community?
You know, it's, so a lot of the guys that went into the XFL were my friends of mine. And that staff and the XFL, the original XFL, was a really awesome, fantastic officiating staff. They had some of the best across the country. And because it wasn't in conflict with the NFL, there were some, a lot of guys that are now in the NFL had refereed in there. And also, it actually created an opening for me to get me into arena football, because a lot of those guys were working arena football, left arena to go into the XFL, and created a series of openings that gave me a shot. I don't think I would have been in the NFL if it wasn't for the arena football experience.
So Vince McMahon's one of your favorite guys.
Yeah, he's the reason I'm in the NFL.
That is, that's pretty great. So, all right, one of the things I like talking about is, you know, career development and how you've gained skills. So I have to imagine NFL is way different from refereeing Pop Warner. So how did you, you know, get better at that job, and how did you improve over time?
Well, I think it's a growth, like anything that you do, right? And so when I first got in the NFL 19 years ago, you know, you think you're ready to handle it. It's a big stage, and the game is just fast. Yeah. It goes very fast. And you work college football, and you think, okay, I've seen it, I've done it, you know. But then you get in the National Football League, and the athletes, and every athlete, all 22 players on the field, you know, are all amazing, right? So then college football, you might have two or three guys, one playing quarterback or running back or whatever, and they might be able to outrun the linebackers. In the NFL, those guys can't outrun the linebackers, right? The linebackers are equally as fast and equally as athletic. So I think experience is what you really have to gain in anything that you do. You're a CEO of your company, and I would imagine you've gotten better through experience, right? You make mistakes, you learn. And so that's a big part of it, is just having that experience. I didn't really, I think, find my stride until my fifth year in the NFL, where I really got an understanding of the rules. But, you know, I will go back to arena football in the NFL Europe. It taught me how to be a professional. It taught me how to travel professionally. It taught me how to do the paperwork. And I think that's all stuff that really helped me and my maturation as an NFL football official. And, so I would say, to kind of short answer, is I think the experience and being at something for a little while has made me progress and develop. And that comes from snaps, you know, that comes from actually being engaged and working.
Yeah. But kind of the 10,000 hours concept, you just have to do it to really master it. And do you do things like, you know, do you rewatch the game to kind of see how you think you made the calls, if you made the right call or the wrong call? Is that you studying footage?
Absolutely. Film is a really important part of our, you know, process basically during the week. So on the way home, I get a thumb drive after the game of the TV copy of the game. So typically when I'm flying home, I'll watch the game. You know, I'll look at specific plays. I will evaluate our crew. I will evaluate my announcements. I will go and I'll look and go, oh, wow. How did I end up saying that? Or that was really clumsy, or, you know, God, I could have said that better. You know, a lot of times too many words get you in kind of a jam, right? You got to walk it back, and you're out there you're like, oh, how do I get this back? You know? So I try to be a little bit, I have a quick cadence. I kind of pop through my announcements. So I work on that. I look at that. I practice that. And then I review those things, and then we get a review on Tuesday, Wednesday from the NFL office. They look at the game and they provide feedback as well.
Okay, cool. So that's good. Yeah. Good study initiative. All right. So I'd love to transition. I'm sure we'll circle back to some of the refereeing as part of this, but starting your own company, you know, coming off of this. So for starters, I'd love to give you the opportunity to pitch your business. Let us know, you know, what you're all about, and maybe we can help you get some customers here.
Absolutely. So Cuddly is the only dedicated crowdfunding platform that was built specifically for animal welfare organizations. So rescues and shelters across the world use Cuddly. It's a unique melding together of monetary donations and products. So a donor knows when they come to Cuddly.com on our platform that they are donating to animals specifically in the care of verified 501c3 partners. So they're not, there's no scams. We verify everybody. We use GuideStar. We go in and we check their EIN number. We make sure they're a valid organization. And we provide this level of transparency, if you will, that the donor can give to this animal. And most of the animals that are in the care of our sheltering partners are abused and neglected animals. Hmm. So there is a bit of an incongruency in relationship to the brand Cuddly and what we do. And we really try hard to share the success stories. And when this animal comes into the care of our partner, for example, it causes a lot of strain on the financial resources of their organization.
Yeah.
Remember, Michael, most of these organizations are volunteer-based. Their funding, 80% of their funding comes from outside sources. So fundraising is an integral part of how they operate. I always say that our sheltering partners, who are some of the most amazing people that I've ever met, they wake up every morning to save animals. They don't wake up every morning and say, how can I be a better fundraiser? And that's where Cuddly steps in. So it's like a SaaS platform. It's free to our partners. We don't charge them a dime. So the rescues and shelters do not pay for our services. Our services are monetized through the kind and donation and tips from our donors. We have a wonderful donor community. And so, you know, it's a two-sided marketplace, if you will, yeah, built specifically to save animals.
And so is Cuddly a 503C? I'm trying to remember my...
Yeah, 501C3.
Yeah.
No, we're a mission-driven for-profit business.
So is that a B Corp now?
We're thinking about it. We've talked about it, and our board is having that conversation. Actually, we're a venture-funded business. We just received funding from Lead Edge Capital, a great group out of New York. They're just amazing partners.
Oh, nice. Well, Lead Edge said no to me, so congratulations. You got that one done.
Well, I will work my way back and see what we can do.
I never forget the no's. It sticks with me for, yeah.
Michael, I will tell you, you're so right. I mean, 98.9% of the time you get a no, right? You're not big enough. You didn't go to the right school. You don't know, you know, it's too niche. All the different reasons. You're too early.
Haven't done this before. You're an accountant. What are you doing? Yeah.
Right.
You hear it all.
Right. And I will say, I understand why, you know, they have to make investments on moonshot businesses. And that's one thing I loved about Lead Edge is that they really understood our business. They invest in companies that have really basically found product market fit like we have and have taken a lot of the risk off the table in relationship to the business model. And they're just a phenomenal partner. But I do understand the you know, investment thesis basically for venture capital. The one thing that I will say that I really do appreciate is that when a VC tells you no, they actually get back to you and tell you no.
Yes.
And they tell you why.
Instead of ghosting you. Yeah, and I don't want to get it confused with I don't like Lead Edge. I was a big fan of theirs. Part of why I remember the no so much. And yeah, they give you the time of day to let you know. I very much respect that in the VC world. That's not common, and it's really frustrating to not understand why, right?
Yeah, I saw an idea a couple of years ago, and it was just head scratching to me. Is some firm in San Francisco got $1 million funding because they delivered warm chocolate chip cookies in the afternoon to tech companies. Right? You have a real business, Michael. You are actually a real company. Not saying that they're not a real company, but a scalable idea, and yet you couldn't get that funding. I know.
It's
crazy.
It's a weird dynamic up there. And how long ago did you start Cuddly?
So we started the business in 2014. We actually came out as a ad monetization platform trying to drive viewership to pet adoption. And okay. Then we had a crowdfunding secondary piece of our business model that was there that actually, after 2 years, I looked at the business and said, this isn't working. You know, some months we're making money, some months we're losing money. It's an arbitrage game. But this crowdfunding aspect, this fundraising piece is working. We're growing month over month over month. And so we pivoted in 2016, completely went dark. Like every startup pivots, right? We've made that our lane. We came out in 2017 with the revised platform. We built a lot of tools and functionality on the back end for our sheltering partners to improve the fundraising aspect of our business. And then we added products in 2018. And by adding products, it changed the whole trajectory of the business.
And by products, do you mean the physical products that people are donating? Or?
Yeah. So if you think about cuddly, you think like a wedding registry. So your friend's getting married and there's a honeymoon fund there for them to go on their honeymoon where you can donate money or you can buy them a toaster or you can buy them, you know, plates or dishes or whatever they need. Cuddly's the same thing. We're a wedding registry, but we're built specifically for animals in the care of shelters and rescues.
Okay.
So you as a donor come into Cuddly and you can donate ointments, a bed, food, all these different products that the animal needs while they're in the care of this foster or rescue organization. What really is awesome about it is that when that animal gets adopted, now the adoptive family has a starter kit, if you will. It makes the transition economically more favorable and helps that animal get adopted.
My wife and I have been looking at adopting cats recently, and it's surprising how expensive it is. It's not a cheap thing to go through. And so I want to circle back to the other portion of your business. When you kind of realized the marketplace was performing better, did you make the decision to completely chop that part of the business when you pivoted and not do that anymore?
We did. We just completely leaned into the fundraising. In a startup's life, as you know, there's some critical inflection points that you come to, and that was one of them. We had one other opportunity. It was a distraction now looking back on it, but we wanted to scale this because we kept getting no from venture capital. So we thought, well, we kept hearing that we were too small of an idea. And so we decided, well, let's go after the consumer. Let's build a baby registry for millennials so they, when they adopt an animal, they can share it with their friends. It's a really good idea, but it's a competing business idea, you know, against what we were doing in the fundraising for shelters and rescues.
Right.
And that was a distraction for us. I look back on it now. But to answer your question, once we chose the fundraising lane, we've stayed in that lane. And that's how we've been able to scale this business.
Focus is a theme I've heard over and over again. I don't think I've ever talked to anyone who's regretted focusing too much on an area. It seems to be a theme. And it's hard to do. I feel like in 2016, you know, we had like good times were rolling. They kind of still are. And the world was ours. And a lot of people lost focus and got distracted. So it's super impressive that, you know, during that time, you were able to remain focused and get to, you know, achieve what you have today.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you. I think that, the honest self-talk, the honest self-reflection was we were too busy trying to chase the yes from venture capital. And so we were trying to pivot into an idea that was meaningful to them, you know, so to speak. That was, you know, that moonshot idea. And looking back on it now, when I really made the decision to say, I don't care about becoming a venture funded business anymore. What I care about is building a great company that serves its role and the role that we play in the sheltering community and continue. And when I focused on the business and when I focused, you have to raise capital. And as you know, raising capital is a full-time job. So you manage a company and you're raising capital. It's very difficult to do. And all the entrepreneurs that are listening that have done it or are doing it, just know it's a challenging, you know, path to undertake.
And do you have co-founders?
I did actually. We bought him out. It was never my intention for Cuddly to be a job. Cuddly was an angel investment for me initially.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I came at it as the angel investor. I gave him $25,000 and had him spin up an MVP and said, go prove to me that people will give us their credit card and prove to me that shelters and rescues will trust us with their fundraising. And it worked. And so I continued to put more money in. He went through a kind of a series of issues and we had to part ways. And ultimately I became the CEO, you know, I became running the company. Day-to-day CEO.
And how many employees do you have?
We're up to 25 now.
25?
Yeah, we're 25 and we're grown the business 365% since last summer.
Whoa.
So we're on a tear. You know, COVID's been friendly for us and in that sense, the animals are winning. I always like to say, because they're being taken out of the shelters. And if you think about our sheltering partners, a lot of the fundraising tactics that they used to use, like adoption fairs and whatever, you know, bake sales, anything one-on-one has been removed from them. So they now need to fundraise differently. So Cuddly was well positioned.
Yeah, I know a lot of charities we work with are struggling on ways to keep the donations up. It's a tough time. So I'm really, you know, it's fascinating, this kind of, you invested and then started to work at the company and then started to hire out. So like, what I mean, what was it like moving from investor to executive there, and kind of how did you handle the cultural impact of that? I'd love to hear about your evolution as a CEO.
No, for sure. I've always, even when I was the angel investor, I kind of had my hand on the financial side of it. I really think it's very important to run a really tight series of books, right? And you want to have clean financials all the time. So it's sort of my personal mantra, and it kind of flows with what you subscribe to as well.
Could not agree more. Yep.
Yeah. So I kept my hand on that, and I know that my co-founder, that wasn't his strength. So I had a hand in the business, but I wasn't running where I had to really kind of get up to speed quickly was the tech side. Because as I've been a serial entrepreneur my whole life, I started a messenger courier company in my parents' garage when I was 21 years old.
Okay.
We grew it to about a $3 million business. We had about 30 employees, and I sold it to a roll-up in 1998.
Okay.
Kind of back in the time when waste management was rolling up trash companies, these guys were rolling up courier companies.
Okay. You
know? Yeah. And so it was good. It was a good experience. I went and joined the M&A team for that roll up, and we bought 66 companies. I learned how to value businesses. I learned how to look at balance sheets. I learned how to EBITDA. I learned the multiple evaluation. I learned that business owners like to run their country club memberships through their businesses. But then when they get bought, they realize, we had to tell them, hey, you can't run your country club membership through your business anymore because we bought your company.
But that's where I do business, is on the golf course, so I'm allowed to run it through, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure
that's how we're paying for your acquisition, is stripping out all the expenses that you had in this business because you were living in the company, right? That's how we paid for the acquisition. But it took us a little bit for guys to realize that we gave them a bunch of cash and they could no longer do that anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of like, welcome to the big time. There's actual, there are auditors and whatnot. They ask questions about these things. Why is there this charge to the Riviera, for example? That might be that might be one. So now, as a leader of your organization today, I'd love to hear if you have any philosophies on how to lead people. And this year in particular has been tough with COVID. Obviously, everyone moving to remote. Have there been any unique challenges from this year?
So going to the distributed workforce because of COVID was not in my comfort zone, because I'm grew up in a time, being a business for 30 some years now, that, people were in the office and they're accountable, and you like seeing them working at their desk or what have you. We had a long chat about it this weekend, actually, at my game. We were just talking about people and workforce, and one of the guys on the crew had been remote for the last 20 years. And it's just culturally, he said, it's amazing how the shift has happened, or it's now very favorable to be working remote. We at Cuddly, obviously everybody went remote because of the circumstances, and we're continuing to grow. So I was very impressed with our team and the way they handled it, and the way that everybody, came in and got their computers off their desk if they needed to, and set up home offices. They took desks out of here to set up home offices. We have a young workforce. So a lot of them were in apartments or townhomes or whatever. So they had to carve out areas in their residence to work from. But they've done an amazing job. They really have. And, one of the things about Cuddly that it makes it easy to manage the team is because we save animals. I mean, that's the company's mission, is to help our partners save animals. And you can't work here at Cuddly unless you're an animal lover,
The mission is so clear. I mean, yeah, if you're an animal lover, you are, I have to imagine, all in at Cuddly.
It's a very passionate workforce. So they get up every morning to help our partners, do what they do best, which is save animals. So it's not hard to keep these people, to keep the team engaged.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Closing the books faster, more accurately, maybe not the sexiest mission out there. I have a bit of a challenge with that, but that's awesome. You have that mission that you can that you can go back to. Mm-hmm. And let's see the quarantine. So you have younger people. Have you noticed any challenges they have working from home in the apartment setup? We're kind of similar. We have a young workforce.
Yeah, I have had to tell one team member that they probably need to understand and learn more about virtual background on Zoom. Is getting to a point where The boyfriend was walking by with his shirt off a lot during calls and team calls and such like that. And it's not her fault, right? She's operating at the kitchen table and this basically, but I had to give a little bit of a tutorial on that, you know, but yeah. For the most part, and they've now kind of returning back to the office. I think they like being in here with each other, completely voluntary. We have not mandated that they come back at all. And we will not address that until 2021.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that's the approach that most firms that I've come across are taking.
Yeah.
You know,
I know it seems like the companies switching to fully remote is what gets a lot of the headlines. You see these press releases about, you know, oh, Facebook now to not require anyone to come back or whatever. But with the entrepreneurs I've spoken with, most of them seem to prefer an in-office setup. And it sounds like you fall in that camp as well.
One of my happiest days during the pandemic, Michael, was actually coming back to the office and getting back in that normal routine for me. The great thing about for my office is it's set aside away from the main office just because of the building that we're in. So it allowed me to come in earlier and nobody was in anyway. But for me, getting back to that routine was amazing. It was almost like, I have just found a new life, you know, because as you probably experienced sitting in your home office tucked in there, it's really dreary. Sometimes it gets, you know, it got old quick.
I like the breakup and there's the social aspect. That has been fascinating. We've run, you know, employee surveys and way more people than I would have expected want to come back to the office and work it right. Particularly in LA with the traffic and everything, I was expecting that number to be low. And so it sounds like your employees are the same, kind of want to get back and be with each other.
There's an intimacy factor around the water cooler. I mean, in a sense, you know, I mean, you want to learn about the little things that are going on in people's lives and your coworkers and the sharing. And so to your earlier point about entrepreneurs and startups wanting to be in the office, things happen fast, right? It's a very fast environment in startups. And so you gain something from being in the office. But that being said, I just hired two senior level people added to our team at Cuddly, and both of them requested that they work remotely. And I would say prior to COVID, that would have been a struggle for me, but I was very happy to say yes and very happy to hire them.
What roles were those?
So we just hired a VP of e-commerce and digital marketing who came from Candidate Pet Foods.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that Lead Edges Capital has provided to us is the ability to, I don't want to say top grade because our team was amazing, but they were young. And so I was able to go out and get some experience, which has been very helpful. Like in her area, you know, our business has grown, as I alluded to, very quickly. And so the supply chain side of products and managing that and vendor relationships, she brings a lot of expertise in that area that nobody on the team had that.
Right.
And so she's applying those principles to improve that area of our business. And also she came from an agency background, so she's handling our digital media. We have two agencies that work for us, one that handles our TV and the other one that handles our Facebook paid social. And so she has expertise in that area and helping them what dials to turn and what levers to pull and to help, you know, optimize our ROAS, if you will, our return on ad spend. And so that's why I hired that individual.
And when you're hiring executives, what types of things are you looking for in terms of not necessarily background, but more the soft skills and other qualitative areas?
You know, I don't have a hard and fast recipe. In this particular case, you know, we put an ad on LinkedIn and we got a lot of really great candidates. But when this individual came across on her application or her, you know, her resume came across, I knew right there that was the person that I wanted to hire. And I very rarely have had that happen. Usually you interview two or three people and then you kind of go through the process and everybody's dancing, right, back and forth, and you check resumes. But there's only been a couple times in my business life that I've had that. And this, you know, and you don't want to get, I almost got myopic to the point where I really wanted this person, so, you know, to hire her. It turns out it was a really good hire and I'm really grateful and, you know, that it didn't backfire. You don't ever want to get that, you know, that reliant on that, but she was a perfect fit. Came from pet, ran a large part of a large pet food company, had digital marketing experience and supply chain logistics expertise. So I went out and aggressively recruited that person, you know, to come on board.
Yeah. So was that a gut feeling you had when you saw the resume? Always go with your gut, right?
We say that officiate all the time. And, you know, you talk about officiating and how it helps me in business life. Your first instinct on your call, trust it. 9 out of 10, you're going to be right. Where I've seen officials get themselves in trouble, including me, is you start thinking about it. You start second guessing yourself. You have to officiate to be successful in the National Football League. You have to officiate from instinct. The times I've gotten in trouble is when I've been in my head thinking.
The game's too fast.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's too much to hold on to. Yeah.
It just is. And so in life, you know, I always buy the first car I see typically. I'm kind of that way.
I'm that way a little bit too. I like to, you know, yeah, as soon as I get the gut feeling, I like to get stuff done and move on to the next thing as well. So could not agree more. Now I want to go back to the younger employees and then you're hiring the executives. You know, that's oftentimes the younger people view it as, oh, I'm getting topped and this is going to, you know, ruin my career path and I don't have as much opportunity. It's a difficult conversation to have, but there's a reason every company does it. It's because the experience is very, very valuable. So I'm curious how you approach those discussions with your team or what their take on all of that was.
Yeah, we definitely have that situation. So, you know, I believe in running a lean startup. We were very capital efficient. So we didn't, again, we had young people on the team who either came to us, you know, right out of college, for example, and maybe had a year or two. In one particular case, the young lady that is running our email marketing area, she was trying to do a lot for me, right? And the marketing side, she was trying to grow. She's 2 years out of college. But what I realized, and I was managing the marketing, and I don't have a CMO background. It was kind of self-taught. What I realized as the business continued to scale was I need to bring this person in. I need to bring in a seasoned person. So I went to her and I said, hey, her name's Alexis. I said, Alexis, I'm going to hire this person. You're going to report directly to her. But here's how I see it. I've topped out. I can't teach you anymore. I'm not going to make you better. But she will. And by you working underneath her and by you learning what she's, you know, she's a seasoned 8 to 10 year executive, business executive. Now you're going to be able to take your career to the next level.
Yeah.
And I positioned it that way to her and she bought in and she sees the value of that now.
Then she sounds like a good, smart employee who kind of sees the value of that. Yeah. I've noticed, I feel like there's a clear delineation of those who respond well to it, they are going to progress in their career. They're going to learn from that person and they end up being some of the best employees that we have. So I guess I'm curious, just, I want to get towards wrapping things up here. And so on a really high level, I wanted to end it with, if there was advice you could give our audience and, you know, keep in mind, it's mostly accountants who are trying to figure out what they want to do in their career. They hopefully are going to be executives one day, might be entrepreneurs, founders. So is there, you know, any broad advice you can provide to the audience on how to achieve that goal of an executive or an entrepreneur?
I would say, and it's interesting speaking to, you know, people that are probably risk averse in a sense, because they're, you know, is take the risk.
Yeah.
Especially when you're young. Don't live your life regretting or shoulda, coulda, woulda. That's one thing that I can look back, and I'm 56 years old, and I can look back and I can say, I took the risk. My second startup. So my first startup was successful. My second one was it's still actually on the app stores on Google and Apple, is a napping program where it helps you take a nap for 26 minutes. It's a power napping program. Huh. But this was 10 years ago, you know, and it was early. It was right before the App Store came out. Now Calm and Headspace are really right. Big. They're valued very high, you know, but I was too early. I was like pet.com or whatever, where, they got a ton of money and they were just too early. And now look at Chewy, right?
Right.
So, but I took the risk and, you know, it cost me a lot of money and it didn't work out, but I learned things from that I was able to now transition and benefit at Cuddly, you know. And so take the risk. I guess my advice would be, if you're young enough and you have an entrepreneurial bent or you want to do something, it's a lot harder at 56, Michael, to do a startup.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I couldn't agree more. And you're right. I think the audience is probably more risk averse than the average one. And but the beautiful thing we have going in accounting is there are plenty of jobs available. So if you're 24, you want to take a year to see if something's going to work, you know, it's you just derailing your career for 1 year, and you can always get another job in accounting. It's not a big deal. That was sort of my philosophy. So we are in a uniquely good position to actually take a risk and execute on that.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So take it.
Yeah. Go do it. Let's go. If you got an idea, go make it happen. And you're sacrificing a year of salary, but it could be the best thing you do for your entire life. And it's a moderate risk, high reward proposition, right? It's kind of, yep.
Yep.
All right. Well, John, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. That was a super interesting and informative conversation for me. I hope the audience enjoyed it as well. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me, Michael. I enjoyed it.
Of course.